And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here and declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, up in the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. All right, we're going to go ahead and get learnified even more on cryptocurrencies today because we can. Colin Cantrell is in studio. He's an entrepreneur and innovator who used his years of experience in the aerospace industry and 13-plus years of software engineering to develop the necessary solutions for the growth of the technological base of cryptocurrencies. Oh, that brings up a bunch of questions. Since 2014, he has been developing Nexus after becoming involved in Bitcoin in early 2013. He also is researching and developing new energy systems that will contribute to more sustainability in the future, including hydrogen, electromagnetics, provides humanity with the technology that lowers our cost of life while increases the quality of life. All right, he's one of us. That's cool. Nexus Earth, decentralized currency project looking to distribute networks fairly worldwide via infrastructure such as cube satellites in space. We're going to space and government is so not invited. Nexus, building the infrastructure for a new monetary system using satellites and software to distribute digital currency. You didn't say nothing about no satellites when we talked before.
What? Yeah, well, I figured it wasn't relevant for the moment.
Oh, yeah. You know, see, this is, I'll tell you why it's, and we'll talk about it in a second. Let me see if there's other little tidbits in here. Nexus seeks to free humankind from centralized systems. You're killing me, man. Being decentralized is not merely enough. We must decentralize the decentralization. No! Using software and hardware, Nexus seeks to build the foundation for the most decentralized system to ever be developed. Nexus Earth. This network will empower everyone from the first world to the third world. Not everyone has money, but everyone has time. The time has come to decentralize everything. The foundations of cryptocurrency should be built upon decentralized principles. Nexus seeks to fulfill this mission. Man, you obviously don't listen to the show. Because you would put on all of this, so says Ernie. All right, anyway. The centralization of everything. This is our whole Pirates Without Borders project. Do you even know about that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, man, I'm going to hook you up. Because this is the decentralization of everything. I tell you what's going on. We have Colin Cantrell. Am I selling it right?
Yeah, that's
Colin
right.
Cantrell. So Colin Cantrell is going to be on for at least the next 2 hours. You may want to stick around for the third hour when Patrick Byrne comes on. Because what we're going to do is for the next 2 hours, I got someone in studio during the breaks, over the news. I got a whiteboard in here, and we're going to freaking get it understood. Because I am so sick and tired. And I go, well, then that means like this, right? And they'll, yeah, like that. And I go, okay. So I'll go out and say that, and somebody go, well, that's not right. I go, why not right? Well, this guy said, he goes, well, simplistically, but there's more kind of nuance to the, you don't really understand. Do you? Hell no, I don't understand. I need to understand. So this is what we're going to do today. We're going to understand, because by the time I have Patrick Byrne on, I'm going to be a cryptoed up smart some bitch, because I need to, you know, there's a lot of things I want to talk to Patrick about, and having some verbiage, you know, vocabulary, you know, to where we can talk about the same things, know we're talking about the same thing, we can talk about it. Because Patrick is definitely going to talk about T0. T0 is a new blockchain platform by which he, I remember he launched it from, it was NASDAQ or something, or the SEC, or whatever. It was in, you know, he was in a financial hub or something, and he's going, yep, here comes T0. What T0 stands for, when you do a lot of purchasing transactions on Wall Street, it has like 3 days to settle. Well, then that three-day period, and we kind of sort of almost had it over here a minute ago, you know, that's where naked short selling comes in. Well, that devastated overstock and got Patrick Byrne, a smart guy, went, whoa, wait a minute, look at this. So what you're saying is that you're just pretending you got my stock. You're driving it down. You didn't even get it. And there's all these shares out there that nobody even knows about and then even existed. And you're doing what? So he goes, oh, hell no. So he came using blockchain. He quickly understood that, he goes, with this technology, you could have immediate transfers of stock that's secure and it doesn't have any ability to do short selling. So he's like, man, well, hell yeah, let's do that. Well, you're assuming Wall Street wanted to get fixed. They're like going, damn it. You know, so now SEC, and I remember when Patrick was negotiating, oh, SEC's been really nice to me, man. We're working. I'm going, right. So we'll see how that's going, you know, and if that's going to be implemented. I saw him at Pork Fest. He has, God, man, I guess we should just ask him. I thought it was cancer or something. I think it's hepatitis. He has a liver problem, and he's been using his money to, you know, keep him going. You know, he's doing whatever. He may want to share that with us, but his health was, you know, having problems last year, and now he's feeling better. And, you know, he's like, yeah, let's rock it, man. Let's get on and do it. So he'll come back on. We've been following Patrick since, God, 09, 10. I mean, the naked short selling thing, his lawsuits. He spent $20 million to get like 25, 30 million back or something, you know, going up against the, God, he sued the SEC, Goldman Sachs, and I mean, he went at it. He's going, I want to know exactly how this is going. And so we'll get the resolution. We'll spend a little bit of time. Man, we're just not going to have enough time. So we got to, you know, I need to get up to speed, and in the process, Colin Cantrell gets Nexus Earth, you know, promoted, which I went on BitTrax and bought some just cuz. Okay. Right, and they get the Ernie bump, you know. So I go buy the stuff. Yeah, give me $50 worth or something cuz. You know, if I got $50 worth of Bitcoin back in the day, guess what would have happened? I don't know, but it'd been a lot more money, you know. So we're working on it. And that's, you know, which cryptos to buy. All right. And this first segment, just give you an idea what the show is, because we've got 2 hours, you know, with Colin. I'll get right to Colin when we come back. But this is the one thing. I'm going to explain to him what our concern is, what I'm looking for, and how Nexus Earth might be able to apply. The reason the satellite thing is important to me is because you, no matter how decentralized your thing is, you're on a centralized grid of the man. Oh, let me see. No, we'll go Tor. You know, we'll do Tor or this, that. You know, oh, when that naval intelligence did that, oh, that's better. You know, then you have the internet. So we're going to be out there doing on the internets and stuff. Well, which one's free? Which one's not surveilled? You know, which one can't be censored? Which one can't be shut off? What happens when you go to satellite? If I put a dish on my roof and I'm noding up with a couple of satellites, kind of, we're done. Are we done? Are we done? You know, we can start communicating with that. This is what's coming. All of a sudden, it opens up. You know, we rent here. You know, we don't buy because our landlord just contacted us and said, hey, you know, we just want to let you know, for $1 billion, you can have this place. And I'm going, yeah, well, you know, we got till April to decide, You know, I don't know if they want to sell or not or something. I'm just going, is it time? Is the technology such that we can move out in rural areas in the desert, in the mountains, and operate everything remotely instead of being on some grid? Can we be above the grid? We're not off grid. We're above the grid.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Okay. What we did is I was showing Colin Pirates Without Borders. I'm going, man, we had the same first letter of Mark, or we're the philosophical of what you just said, kind of, you get it? Yeah, we're on board, man. And crypto genius and what? He lives in Phoenix.
Phoenix rising, brother.
Okay, well, where do you live in the valley?
I'm down in Tempe, basically.
Tempe. So Arizona State University area. So East Valley on the other side of the river. Yeah, when it starts raining and stuff like that, you know, the other side of the river means. The other side of the river. Yeah, get your ultralight and go to work. Okay, what we're going to do, literally, that's what happened. I remember in the 70s, 80s, hell, some of the 90s, when it flood, you know, the river would go through the town. You know, the traffic, there's like one or two bridges, and that's it. And it gets so bad. Ah, screw it. Out at Palo Verde, a friend of mine's out there. He goes, there's one guy from the East Valley. He just flew his ultralight out there. And then back and forth. He's like, yeah, sucks to be a y'all, man. Of course, if it's raining. But so Nexus. Now, Nexus Conference, there's a conference all about Nexus and the future of blockchain technology in Aspen, September 21st to the 23rd at the Aspen Meadows Resort all day. So Colin Cantrell is going to, you know, he's going to tell everybody about it. But I've seen Nexus, if it's the one that I'm, you know, looking at here, is traded on Bittrex already. So you already got a crypto out?
Yeah. So I actually launched the blockchain on September 23rd. 2014. So that was the fall equinox, basically at that time, and that was in that time it was called CoinShield, which was just kind of about destroying some of the scams, some of the problems that we were having in the industry. Because I mean, back at that time, there was, you know, anybody can make a blockchain. They were cloning Litecoin. There was the Aurora coin scams. There was all this crap going on. We're just like, well, let's see if we can do something about this. So maybe we can create a way to kind of help bring more awareness to other people in the industry. And then it just kind of evolved into Nexus from there.
All right, let me tell you. Oh, it's a cryptocurrency. And I don't care. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the reason I bring up the pirate thing and the decentralization thing is because we already have, if you look at some of our artwork, Donna, you know, we'll make sure we'll get you at least a shirt for coming in. You know, so we got some cool stuff. When you go to the shop, one of the pieces of art that we have is Bits of Eight. Now, Bits of Eight, it was, you know, it kind of has the pirate word cloud and freedom and anarchy and leave me aloneism kind of thing. And it has a skull and crossbones made out of a word cloud with the main words, Bits of Eight. In the beginning, we knew that we were going to have a digital currency. You know, you're not pirated up if you know. I need a pirate currency. I would just call it pirate. I mean, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll make up one. But the thing is that it has certain features. And these features are some of the main things that I was promised in 09, 10 when I first started covering Bitcoin back in the, you know, 10,000 Bitcoin pizza days. Okay. Yep. So this was from my perspective, I'm going, when you can trade it, when I can get, God, who was it? Charlie Schrem and Eric Voorhees, they first started with Bit something, Bit Instant. Yeah, that was it, Bit Instant. So Bit Instant, live on this show, we said, I had them right when all the, you know, the documentaries are being done while they're, you know, going in, and Mandrake and all these guys were doing, I mean, I'm, in the doc, I go, hey, that's when we were doing the shows, you know, talking. Well, the guy that I was telling you about, Theo, that's coming to DEF CON, and the guy is going there from New York, he filed suit against the Bit license scheme from the Department of Financial Services in New York when Ben Lasky was doing all his crap. When he's like all buddies with the cryptocurrency world and U.S. government, and we're here to help, and we don't want to put a damper on, and they arrested Charlie Schrem.
Yep.
That's when Eric Voorhees went to Panama and suck it, and eventually he went on Shapeshift and out of Europe. So this is a little bit of background, you know, of the time that we were doing this when Bit Instant was just making it available for you to be able to trade currency. You could go silver, cash. They would just say, hey, look, technology, we can do it. We got $8,000 a day spending on attorneys trying to figure out and negotiate if they didn't want to be negotiated.
Yep.
You know, the bureaucracy, I'm sorry. They're penetrating the bureaucracy. You're not allowed.
Well, it's the vertical system. That's the problem with it.
Yes. Okay, now what happened was, live on the show, Bit Instant came on. I go on site and it says, all right, you can. They went through some kind of money transfer. Like, you look on the back of your ATM card and it has 15 gazillion different networks and which ATMs work. Now they all overlap and, you know, whatever. One of those payment systems had Walgreens, Walmart, Wells Fargo, and all your banks and so on, and you could wire to an account, and they would give you Bitcoin. So that's like money transferring through banks. So what? Because banks don't give a crap. I go to the merchant window, and I say, transfer this to that. They do. They go, okay. Didn't even charge me money.
Yep.
I go, well, does it cost anything? Oh, no, we wouldn't charge for that, some 23-year-old girl. And I'm going, yet. I'm going, you're like I'm being... Oh my God! Oh my God! You're pre-TSA. You're taking off your shoes. You know, you didn't you know we don't do that if you're pre-TSA. You're like, oh, you just want to slap these people. So then, transfer the money, Bit Instant, and then within an hour or two, I got Bitcoin in my wallet. Now this is years ago. I go down to a coin and bullion dealer on Shea and Scottsdale Road.
Okay.
I go to his Liberty Coin something. We got them to hook up with Bit Instant to have where they could take Bitcoin. I go in. I go blip. They gave me $200 worth of silver. And as far as I'm concerned, silver's cash. Okay. Yeah. So if I go money from the bank, got Bitcoin. Bitcoin bought silver. Loop closed. As far as I'm concerned,
it's real.
And that's when the man freaked.
Mm.
They go, oh hell no. You're so that's a little bit too much freedom there right there. Can't have that. So they shut them down. But it proved the point. It could be done. That's what scared the central banks.
Yep.
So they were like, nope, not allowed to play. Now they're doing arresting. You know, you didn't get your permit license. Oh, would you give me that license? No.
And they're trying to make examples of certain people too.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I mean,
it's a PSYOP. Yeah, I got came up with a new acronym here, FUD.
Fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Exactly.
Oh, that's a big thing in crypto. I mean, back in the 2013 days, that's all there really was. People are like, FUDing this, FUD that, because nobody really understood anything. So whatever somebody said, it would be designed to either push the market down, or there's FOMO, which is fear of missing out. That's the opposite, where it's going up.
Okay, fear of missing out?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is, so I learned all this stuff. I mean, of course, it's taken me years to learn. But anyway, so I get the acronym. But the, so now I share this with you because this is what my goal is. Blah, 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 blah. I want some of the things I was promised. Anonymity. Is Bitcoin anonymous?
Well, I mean, it's pseudo-anonymous.
Aha! See, everybody, they said it's anonymous. Then
no,
they came out and
anonymous.
They go, no, well, okay, Ernie, well, we didn't really mean it's pseudo-anonymous. So I had to look up pseudo. I know what's pseudo. I look, will we look it up?
Partially, basically.
It says not, okay? It is not enough. Pseudo-anonymous means not anonymous. Now, it can be.
Well, it
okay?
means kind of partial. Like, a pseudo-prime is a prime number that's verified with the Fermat equation, which basically means you verify it a certain way, but it
up.
Can be.
I see. This is what I'm dealing
with. It's gotten silly.
All right. So when we come back, we'll get straight to this. I want them to understand why we need the features. Does Nexus Earth have the features we're looking for?
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay. It's time for calling the monologuist now. Uh-oh. So now I need to make the selection and get me learnified and stuff today is one reason why you're here. And you're going to be able to hang for Patrick Byrne, you know?
Yeah, sure, I'll hang
around. Okay, yeah, you can help, you know, decipher. The what I want is a cryptocurrency for being decentralized, okay? Yeah. Pirates without borders, you know? Pirate. You know, they go, well, you can't. What'd you get permissions? What about, who built the roads? Pirate. I mean, you know, I do pirate. I mean, you know, we do whatever we can get away with and want and not violate another's
No, don't violate each other's rights.
Well, this is one of the things we have the letter of Mark, the first letter of Mark, you go to piratswithoutborders.com. That's Ben Stone reading that, the bad Quaker. And he did a really good job. And we spent a lot of, Davi Barker and I and Derek and Ben and a bunch of people, you know, Paul Rosenberg. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that input on the verbiage of that to kind of get the right tone. So when you heard that, you're going, okay, we're in, you know. So we need a crypto. And when I talk to the Bitcoin guys, oh, it's got to be Bitcoin. Why? Because it's got to be Bitcoin. Why? When last year it went from 75 or whatever percent market share down to 30. Roger Ver was on last week, man. He's all freaking out. And he's like, you know, man, I can't believe Bitcoin. I go, how many times have I told you over the years, where is the central plan for Bitcoin? Core development. Core development goes in MIT. Core development gets funded by all these different guys that are paying Blockstream the salaries that have Washington, D.C. lobby addresses of the firms and GovCoin.
For all we know. I mean, we don't know that entirely, but it's entirely possible.
I know. Yes. So you understand. Everybody is like, well, we're not sure. I go, okay. I got one observation that I've made throughout the years. If they, who are they? They, them, those, okay? There are those that just want to be left alone, and there are those that just won't leave them alone. They, okay? Who are they? The ones that won't leave me alone. That's who they are. They want to do regulations. They come up with shiny badges and guns, and they arrest people, and they're they, all right? So if you're either they or you're not they, okay? You're leaving me alone, you're not leaving me alone. In the Bitcoin space and cryptocurrency, the man's not leaving us alone, or it'd just be done already, okay? So I'm going, all right. So now I'm sitting here going, if they can control something, profit from it, maintain it, centralize it, you know, censor it, whatever, if they can, they will. And if they can, they are, okay? And they sure as hell want to. So I kept hammering. I had Andreas Antonopoulos on, you know. Christoph Atlas, Roger Ver, Eric Voorhees, you know, Vitalik Buterin. I mean, I'm sitting down at Pork Fat. I have him on the show, and I just grill the snot at him. No, well, we're gonna. And man, it has not always been the way they say. So I am like, where is it? They go, well, you know, we had this one problem, but it hard forked into the. I go, whoa, wait a minute. How did it do that? Well, core development. Wait. There's a core development? Okay. Who are these guys? Well, it's a dozen or so, 20 guys. It kind of sounds like Fed governors to me. What's the difference? Yeah. So I'm like, no, there is. You mean there's a place? And who pays them? Well, nobody pays them. Oh, well, somebody's going to start paying them, and guess who they work for now? Okay.
Exactly.
That's exactly why. So the Bitcoin, what do they call it? The Bitcoin Foundation. I remember that was all going on. Satoshi Roundtable in the Bahamas. We talked to the guys. Well, that was going on. All of this has came down to one thing. The decentralized nature of Bitcoin is centralized in the development of it. And when it started going in, it went back to MIT and I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? Might as well just call it GovCoin. SaxCoin.
Yeah.
Okay? So this is one of the complaints that Roger had last week. They're not scaling it because they're not scaling it. And I go, well, there's opportunities and options and you can do it. He goes, look, they don't want to.
No.
They're dragging it. They're doing, there's something going, which brings up openings for altcoins. Well, I don't know, alt sounds like freedom to me. Like they go to Mises in, I guess it was the 60s or something. He's going, loophole. What is loophole? You guys keep saying loophole. And they go, well, they explain what a loophole is that you can kind of get through bureaucracy. And he goes, oh, loophole is another word for freedom. Yeah. So, Nexus Earth. Tell me, man, why did you do it? What is the features? Why is it better? And I'm going to grill the snot out of you. And you got forewarned. You got an idea what my perspective is on looking for a crypto. Pimp it. Go.
Well, I mean, basically, the reason I started is because I was looking at the space and I was like, well, we have all these scams here. How can we help bring awareness to that? That's what started with CoinShield. And then from there, the development continued to grow until I started realizing, well, hey, we can start building these kind of network-based societies where we can develop these new models that allow people to kind of develop things themselves in a way and have more of a collective authority. Because I believe that, you know, everybody has a right to kind of give their boundaries and say, like, this is my space, please don't violate this space. But I think one of the big problems in the system that we have is that people are subjected to somebody else's authority. And we have this democracy that should do that, but it really doesn't. It's easily corruptible. So when we get into Bitcoin, we start realizing, well, why haven't they updated the block size? Well, because the transaction fees are going way up. You know, it's causing problems that way. I mean, they're making money on it. Where's their incentive? It's the selfish mining. It's all those different problems. You know, when Satoshi initially had about 20 megabyte blocks in the initial time, when, you know, Bitcoin was still a baby, but he's like, well, you know, with Bitcoin's worth, you know, fractions of a penny, it's not going to cost too much to fill up these blocks with transactions and spam it and slow down the network. So let's scale the block size from 1 megabyte to 2 to 5 as the network grows, and then prune the UTXO, which is unsigned transaction output, which that's kind of where the pseudo anonymity of Bitcoin comes in, where basically you don't...
They define pseudo for me.
Pseudo is kind of like, it can be, and it's partially, as far as I understand the word, it's partial and it has the possibility to be that, but it's not really. So like, you have a public address, there's no way to really know who that is. Now, if you have, let's say, 10 inputs in your transaction, right? You're basically going to be signing every one of those inputs to send, you know, let's say 5 or 10 outputs, which you're not going to know what one's linked to what. And that's where some of the initial design of like the splitting and combining, if you read Satoshi's white paper, it starts talking about that, where, you know, if you're very, very careful, you can make sure that nothing links back to you so that you can kind of maintain a level of privacy. Because on a blockchain, you need to have some form of transparency in order for it to be processed by the network-wide nodes. I mean, Zcash and things like that, you have issues with not even knowing how much is minted. So I think there are certain balances between the two that need to be utilized. So one of the things, like, I guess I break Nexus into a few different categories as far as like feature set, because I just kind of started building stuff in 2014. I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do this now. I can do that. I can do that. Oh, this needs to be done. And going
Wait. Time out. I just started building stuff.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, you tinker toying with software or something? I mean,
yeah, so I was working
computer. I was working.
Oh yeah, sorry.
All right. You were 3 years old, and your first memory was what? I mean, I need to know who you are. You know, how do you have these skills? How old are you?
I'm 26.
You're killing me. Okay, 26. Had a computer when you were 3? Did you?
About I think 8, 7 or 8.
Okay, so you can program and code, I imagine?
I started that at about 11, 12.
Of course you did. Okay. So now, when I grow up, I want to be a video game maker or something.
Well, kind of. I mean,
You went through that phase?
I just enjoyed making video games. It was kind of one of the ways. I was kind of a loner as a child, so, you know, I'd just go up in my room and I'd make these worlds in video games and be like, hey, I can go wherever I want in the universe because I can make it here and I can make it quickly. So that's one thing that really drew me into video game designing is I'm like, hey, okay, you can make
so
all
of this. Wait, real quick. Are you married?
No.
Have a girlfriend?
Nope.
Are you gay?
Nope. I got two kids.
You have 2 kids, so you were married?
Not really.
Okay, so you had children?
Yes, sir.
Okay. This is, I'm just wondering it. He sits alone in his grandma's basement all day, every day, but he's a good-looking kid, okay? So, I mean, you got some pretty fine, you know, could definitely want to knock on your door. They sure as hell do now. Donna, get some pictures of this boy.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Freedom is the answer.
What's the question?
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
I don't know what the question is, but it doesn't matter. Freedom's the answer.
You know,
from the lies of life. Okay, Colin, we need to know more about Colin. You know, we're getting all deep. That's why we wanted to do the 2 hours to get to know each other here. So in this segment, your first memory at 3 years old was... I mean, when did you know you were a computer math, we're going to take care of it geek? When that happened?
Oh, as soon as I found out you could program a computer. I mean, when I got my first one, it was just like, I was on it all the time. I'm like, this is so cool, this is so cool. I was looking at everything. I played Motocross Madness. It was my thing. And then my dad, one day we were at, I think it was Staples at the time. And he just grabbed this little program. He's like, this is called Visual Basic. And I'm like, oh, what's that? He's like, you can make computer programs. I'm like, wait, you mean like my video games? Like all those? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, really?
You can do that?
You can really do that? So I go and, you know, I brought it home and I'm like, wow. And I just like, da-da-da-da. And I made this little gambling game. It was called like Lucky 7, where you just click the button and, you know, you get 3 sevens and you'd win or you'd lose. And I was just like, this is so cool. I stayed up all night building this thing because I was just like, I can't believe you can actually do that. I remember this like that night still so clearly because that kind of started me on this, wow, the potential of computers is we can create and materialize anything. We can make any world. And then that's when I started figuring out, oh wait, I can make three-dimensional games. So I started using, it's got in touch with this website called The Game Creators. And on this website, basically, they started helping it be easier to make three-dimensional games instead of having to interface with the DirectX code and do all the C++. It was kind of this language called Dark Basic Professional. So I started making these three-dimensional games. Like one of them was this jet slalom game where you just avoid all these obstacles. And then I started building this real-time strategy game, which real-time strategy is kind of like Age of Empires status, but this one was in 3D, and I called it World War III, The Last World War. So it was kind of a big, giant strategy war simulation game, and I made like the B-52 bombers and the nukes and all that stuff, and it was really fun. That was something that I spent a lot of my time on because, you know...
Yeah, a lot of your time. I mean, we're talking...
Well, this is when I lived in the attic.
How many years?
I mean, this is when I was growing up, so I stayed up in the attic because, you know... I kind of like I said, I was a bit of a loner, so I just kind of didn't really want to deal with too much of what was going on with the family, so I just stayed up in my room and programmed my computer and went to school, and that's that.
Did you have any friends that shared the same kind of abilities?
I had a couple of them that tried to, you know, get interested in things, but like, I mean, I tried to teach them a little bit. I mean, I guess you could say that, yeah. Like, one of them was Corbin from back in the days, and... Clint, you know, I mean, Clint's actually my brother-in-law now, too, so it's kind of interesting, but yeah, we were just way back in high school, so I mean, you know,
You know, that's the one thing, we get a timestamp on this, during the Levolution, no, eight years ago, what was that? That was, has it been 10 years?
And the Fed movement and all that?
Yeah, see, you were in your teens.
Yeah.
You know, this is like, you know, this is what happens, you go, you know, kind of put a nexus. See, we used to call the libertarian movement the Liberty Nexus. We even had a site called the Liberty Nexus.
Imagine that.
And it was, we could see that it was just bringing together of people and then stuff happened.
Exactly. I mean, connection is like, even this simple experiment, they did this thing, it's called the Rat Park experiment. So they're initially trying to discover about addiction. So they put this rat in this little cage and they give him two water bottles. One of it is laced with heroin and one of it's water. And so, of course, the rat would keep drinking that, you know, heroin water and then overdose and die. And they're like, oh, well, see, addiction's just because it's there. So therefore, you're addicted. So, you know, the opposite of addiction is sobriety. And the other guy's like, no. I think that you're misguided because that rat was in a cage. Here, let's make this rat park where they can fuck. You got all these rats. They can have sex. They can go and they do the little wheels. And then they have access to the drug water and the regular water. And guess what? They drank the regular water. They didn't want the drug water when they were in the rat park. Because the opposite of addiction is connection. The opposite of, like, this isolation, which, like, creates addictive behaviors in some people, like, that is a way that they cope with the fact that they're in a cage.
Yeah.
It's connection. And so bringing back to that point where you say the Liberty Nexus, you know, you connect people together and all this miraculous stuff happens. I mean, that's what happens.
And they all go over the wall.
And that's what happens when you process a thought, when you create a memory, when you go, oh, I get it, the light bulb. You're making neural connections in your brain. You're literally wiring up your brain. So, I mean, how can we say that we're maybe not too different? We just have kind of a higher constellation of consciousness on top of that, where if we're not connected, it's like neurons that are not firing in your brain. And when neurons don't fire, sometimes it's experiences intense pain. Sometimes it's experiences disassociation. And if your neurons can't fire to your motor neurons in your body, you can't walk. So without connection,
they wither and just go away. They're not needed.
So, I mean, that's kind of one of the basic philosophies why we decided to call it Nexus. Is it's like this is the word that can describe everything.
Okay, who's we?
We is, I mean, me and the community at the time. I mean, it was Keith and Preston back then a lot more. So, like, that's when we were deciding to go from the Coin Shield. We're like, well, see, Coin Shield here is protecting the coins, protecting people from what they don't know about crypto, because there's these pump and dump scams all around. Like, that's what you were saying. So we're like, I'm just like, this is going to harm Bitcoin. I saw it years. I'm like, this is just sucking the value out of Bitcoin.
Fear,
all
these alts. And death.
And not even just that. I mean, new people come in to cryptocurrencies, right? They see Bitcoin. They see this great thing. Oh, either I can make money or I can help change the world. And then there's all these scam coins and these things going on. And they're like, ah, and then they get burned. Like Aurora coin, when they drove it all the way to $100, because they're like, we're going to drop this on this country and make it this national currency. And everyone's like, oh, bye, 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 bye. And then they're like, ah, suckers. And they dumped on it. And it's just like, that is not right, because the crypto means freedom to me. Crypto means a possible future that doesn't have all these vertical hierarchical systems that are keeping us in cages. Like, crypto means to me that we in the future can actually have that connection that we deserve. We can live life the way we deserve it, not in these little comprised environments. So why are we going to create more compartments? Why are we going to turn the beauty of crypto back into that? And that's what these pump and dumps do.
Why would you even have this philosophy? Where did it come from? This decentralization of everything mentality.
I've kind of just been born with it, to be honest. Like, I've always just had this feeling. And, you know, I mean, oh, I was told I was wrong for a long time in my life. Oh, no, that's not how life is. Oh, this is just the way it is. Oh, two things in life, death and taxes, all this crap. And I was just like, no, I think there's something more to life. I think we're capable of having more. And as I started just pursuing that feeling over the course of my life, I started realizing, wow, I actually wasn't too far off on here, because you really start seeing the truth of everything. And we start like, whoa. Look at this world that we're in. That,
you know, the inspiration.
It's like coming out of the Matrix.
Oh.
It's like waking up out of the Matrix. We're in the Matrix.
The red pill.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that I'm still trying to zero in on is the understanding that decentralized systems is the most, I don't know, desirable for a lot of reasons. We can go over all the reasons, but, you know, it's robustness, it's diversity, it's, you know, resilience, you know, it's freedom, you know, I mean, go on and on and on. But the decentralization as a trait, a feature of Nexus Earth came from where? Just experience? I mean, you're 26,
well,
man.
I didn't have a word for decentralization until I ran across Bitcoin. And then I started doing some mining with Litecoin and started learning about how the whole protocol worked. Because at first I was like, nah, how does that work? Like, I mean, I was working in marketing at the time, you know, coding stuff, landing pages, CPA, which is cost per action. And I was like, wait, how are they making money running a computer program? That doesn't make sense. And I went and I looked it up and I'm like, oh, whoa. Because I knew about peer-to-peer networks then, you know, I mean, I knew about torrents and Napster and all that. But I didn't really know you could make a currency on it. And I wasn't as familiar with the cryptography aspect in those days. So just when I don't know, the best way I can describe it is when I found out about it and I really understood it, I was like, this is the future.
Why?
Now we,
why?
Because we have a chance now.
Why? What does crypto give that, you know, machete doesn't? I mean, I'm wondering.
Because we can take life into our own hands and say, you know what? If this government's not going to make our lives better, we're going to do it. We're going to do it ourselves. Look at this. Instead of fighting this system, instead of fighting this Federal Reserve and creating problems for ourselves, like the End the Fed movement worked. But, I mean, like, what did it do other than just make people targets and make people get harmed?
You know,
this
we had
way,
shirts that said End the Fed and so on. And finally, it just got to ignore the Fed.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep it. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of like,
no, you're not allowed to do anything else. Go to jail.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you're not allowed to go out on the water. You're not allowed to do this, but international water, there's the loopholes, the freedom, the way that we can circumvent the power systems and make a better world.
You know, I give you this word picture. You know, I am of the opinion that government is a woo-wah car. Woo-wah, 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 like, you know, a police car in France or something, mm-hmm. All right? And it's always those little Fiats, you know, a little VW bug or something. And you're going blazing down the open road in the desert. The sun's setting in your rearview mirror. And you take a look and you'll see woo-ah, woo-ah on the horizon. And he can't keep up because you're going plaid. And
yep.
It just slips over the horizon and you forget they were even there.
It's the peaceful change, man. It's the
way
we change
obsolescence of government.
Yes. All you right, cannot well, change a system by fighting it. You make a new model that renders the current model obsolete.
That's a bunk Mr. Fuller kind of thing.
There we go.
Yeah, see, yeah. See, we're on the same wavelength. We'll be right back.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keenan, the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Wednesday, July 19th, 2017. Silver is trading at $16.30 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,242 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at 3.4 cents, and the average price of Bitcoin is $2,353. Antiwar.com reports nonstop smaller wars and officials always playing up the risk of bigger wars to get bigger military budgets have always had Americans worried about a new major war being on the horizon, but the latest NBC SurveyMonkey poll shows that such fears have been growing dramatically in recent months. This new poll showed an overwhelming majority, 76% of Americans, are now worried that the U.S. will get drawn into a new major war in the next 4 years. This is an increase of 10% over the last time the question was asked in mid-February. As far as who the U.S. might get into that major war with, the plurality went to North Korea, with 41% of Americans believing the isolated nation is the greatest immediate threat to the United States. The Islamic State was second at 28%, Russia was at 18%, and China and Iran rounded out the top five. Interestingly, the threat split heavily along party lines in the U.S., with Republicans much more likely to see the Islamic State as the greatest threat, and Democrats viewing Russia as a much bigger threat. Obviously, this doesn't necessarily line up evenly with the fears of a major war, as the U.S. is already fighting the Islamic State. But the risk of a major war with North Korea is palpable and probably at least partially responsible for driving the growing fear among the American public. This has also been true internationally, with Russia and China both expressing concerns that the U.S. might unilaterally attack North Korea, precipitating a major war that would destabilize the region. In 2115 New England, there are no borders, no states, and no regulations, yet never has a more peaceful and prosperous place existed. Faced with the prospect of waning power, Mr. Drake intends to replace the anarchy of New England with a government. Anarchy in New England by Joe Jarvis is available from Amazon.com and all major bookstores. UPI reports a Cincinnati prosecutor on Tuesday announced he will not seek a third trial for former police officer Ray Tensing, who shot a motorist to death 2 years ago. In late June, jurors could not reach a unanimous verdict on murder or voluntary manslaughter charges against Ray Tensing and the death of Sam DuBose. Tensing's first trial also ended in a deadlocked jury in November. Hamilton County prosecutor Joe Dieters said he did not feel he would be able to convict Tensing. Dieters told NBC News, after discussing this matter with multiple jurors, they have to a person, said to us that they will never be able to get a conviction in the case. I have an ethical duty as prosecuting attorney for this county. If we believe we cannot be successful at trial, we have that duty not to proceed. Dieters said he remained convinced that the officer committed a crime against the driver. Dieters told the Cincinnati Inquirer, "My opinion of this case has not changed as of 2 years tomorrow, and it's not going to change. We left nothing on the table. It's incredibly disappointing professionally. It's disappointing personally. My heart breaks for the Dubose family." Also Tuesday, U.S. Attorney Benjamin Glassman announced his office is reviewing the case to determine whether to pursue federal civil rights charges against Tensing. For nearly 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co. Reuters reports President Donald Trump is looking for ways to defend American-made products by certifying legitimate U.S. goods and aggressively going after imported products unfairly sporting the Made in America label, according to the White House. Trump, who campaigned on reviving the U.S. manufacturing sector, vowed on Monday that his administration would crack down on predatory online sales of foreign goods hurting U.S. retailers. Trump is scheduled on Wednesday to discuss with small and medium-sized manufacturers how to certify their products and keep out foreign counterfeits, according to a senior administration official. Their products include gutter filters, flags, and pillows. The official said, "There's just too many examples of foreigners slapping on Made in America labels to products, and the worst insult is when they do it after they have actually stolen the product design." In March, Trump signed an executive order that gave customs officials more authority to stop pirated and counterfeit items. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, Freedoms Phoenix, .com, 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 yeah, we'll do it later.
Nice falsetto.
All right, well, there, you know, this, yeah, because I can, you know, they go, Ernie, stop singing, man. I go, get your own damn show. Then. All right, this is, what we're going to do now is we're going to focus on cryptocurrencies and Nexus Earth as a particular one. Just I'm going to beat the crap out of it because I don't know anything. We're going to just going to slap it around. And so I'm going to ask some basic questions, and I need to know, one, uses blockchain technology.
Yeah, for now, like to start.
Oh, you may not.
Well, I mean, it's not that we may not. We're actually advancing it to another level. That's kind of what the Tau update series is, Tritium, Omni, and Obsidian. But one of the reasons that I said...
One of the reasons I decided
to start with the blockchain itself is because Bitcoin's based off of that and it's a proven technology, so I could work off of that and start to understand the protocol on a much more, you know, intimate level in order to figure out how to advance it and overcome some of the limitations we're experiencing so that the Tau could be used for Bitcoin to
Tau, say
scale.
That again. What's
Tau.
That
Tau, Tritium, Omni, and Obsidian is three different updates.
Oh, okay. Gosh,
yeah, so but
like,
I mean, it's got the other
it's
philosophy
like Linux
of
Cinnamon
the
Tau. And Rachel oh, no, I mean, and what? Okay, well, you, just saying these words don't mean anything to me.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. That's version 3.0, 4.0, and 5.0, or whatever versions you want. But basically, it when it's done, it's going to be a series of updates that transition a blockchain-based, you know, Bitcoin-based blockchain currency into kind of a more Nexus-based protocol, which is going to allow, you know, more sustainability. It's going to allow higher scalability. It's going to allow partition tolerance, all the different types of checks and balances. I can get into all those details.
We'll get into it. Now, I'm looking at Nexus. It looks like you started it back, what did you say, in 14 sometime, into 14?
Yes, September 23rd, 2014.
Okay, I'm seeing it on Bittrex since January 15. So I'm sorry, when in 14 did you start it?
September 23rd.
Okay, so within a few months, boom, you're on Bittrex. Hell, Bittrex probably wasn't even around before you got...
I mean, they were barely around. It was really difficult to get on any exchange in those days because I made so many changes to the code and everybody was just cloning coins that most of the exchanges only knew how to add a clone coin. And so they couldn't really... figure out how to handle the upgraded hashes or handle some of the different key systems. So
geek stuff, don't care. Okay.
Yeah.
So here we have, it's down on the, you know, low. It took a, you know, jump at just before 2016. You're going, oh, yeah, right there. See, June of 2016, it took a, you know, jump. And then all of a sudden, boom, with everyone else. You know, it goes up, it goes down. But I'm looking at, you had a down here, you know, kind of a half loss, half the gains lost here, the last big gains. But, you know, you're still up there, okay?
We're holding in.
So Nexus made you a bunch of money? Are you a bunch of money guy?
All right, I guess I've made enough to survive.
Forever?
I mean, depends on how well it performs. But, you know, I mean, ultimately... you know, I hope to be able to make it and continue to make it as successful to be able to continue to work on it the rest of my life.
Okay, so this is what it has done is it's done enough that you're able to be liquid enough that you can you convert a little bit into Bitcoin, a little bit into this, a little bit into, you know, cash money, a little bit in I got a car. I mean, you know, it starts when you turn the key. I mean, that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, just enough to be able to get enough trading to be able to make enough money to just survive, yeah.
Okay. So crypto been very good to you?
Yeah, it's been good to me.
All right. Because you know how?
I guess so.
Okay, now how did you know how?
I started by not knowing how, and then working from that and studying the code. I mean, back in the days in 2013...
Studying the code. I mean, first you have to be able to... I go to my son...
You have to be able to code first. Yes.
Exactly. My son goes like this. I go, look, you need to come to this meeting we're going to have. It's all around you. I'll work around your schedule, which that's why it's Sunday or Monday, because depending on everybody's schedule, mm-hmm. and hopefully you get my son to come. And I go... and he started mining Ether, and he's going through, and he's like me, man. Nope. Yeah, I may understand. I'm a real world it, man. It don't mean nothing until it actually, you know, puts in my bank account. So as he's doing it, I'm going, I don't know. Your office is kind of hot. You going to vent this? Damn, it's summer in Phoenix, dummy, you know? Mm-hmm. So how are we going to do this? So he's like, yeah, I'm working on it. And I sent him some electrical meters that you can get for like $15 off of Amazon. You plug it into the outlet, and then you plug your thing into that, and it tells you everything you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going, yep, there we go. Now we know what we need in power and so on. So he goes, Dad, if I can't... I can read. Me and you can read. Gotta go on the internet. Got every question you want ever answered, learn anything, if anything, it's on the internet. I can read. Mm-hmm. And I go, yeah, maybe you can. Well, I need somebody to walk me through, because they use words I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you use a word, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to stop and say,
My
audience doesn't know what you're talking about. Of course, yeah. I understand, as far as you know.
I'm happy to help clarify.
All right. So this is, one, the first thing is, you've done your own coin a few years ago.
Well, I've been building it for the last 3 years, yeah.
Well, people know that it's there,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
So you've been building it, working on it, improving it. When you improve a cryptocurrency, how supported is that? I mean, you know, people, see, I guarantee the vast majority of people that own these cryptocurrencies don't know how to do it or know when you change something for the better or not anyway.
Yeah, pretty much that's where FUD kind of has its roots, fear, uncertainty,
and doubt.
Get closer
to the mic.
Oh, sorry. That's where fear, uncertainty, and doubt has kind of a lot of, you know, leeway in the world, you know, in the crypto world right now, because not everybody understands it. So they see, oh, this could happen, and they freak out. So.
Okay. So now let's start talking about the benefits of Nexus. What does Nexus do better than everything else? Why the hell would you do it? You go, I need this. I'm a decentralized supporting of anarchistic libertarian if I want to be. See, he'd rather use the word libertarian because he wants to get invited to Christmas parties, okay? Instead of, I don't know what. Anarchist, voluntarist,
well, I mean,
so libertarian.
I'm a nonpartisan in the ultimate sense. You know, I generally just like to keep a neutral stance, but I mean, as far as like forward thinking, like I'm working on developing new solutions to the problems that we have in the world. So, I mean, how to define that in a word, I wouldn't know, but I guess libertarian.
Leave me aloneism.
I guess so.
I'm a leave me alone. I'm a leave me aloneist, man. boom, done. Well, you're not a leave me aloneist, or leave me aloneist, and there's not leave me aloneist. Are you leave me aloneist?
No,
you're not a leave me aloneist. Yeah, that'll save you. Okay, now I'm going, okay, you come up with this design, and what were the improvements? What were the problems? Let's focus on Bitcoin. The problem with Bitcoin is what?
Well, I mean, that's an open-ended question with many answers, but the biggest one I see is the centralization, right? Like, the development is kind of centralized. The community has very little say over the block size. I mean, that's just a proof right there that, you know, they're not listening to the people. And now, if you're developing a coin, you're developing a system like Bitcoin, you know, I believe that, you know, receptivity to the public's or the community's desire for it to be formed in a certain way is something that's very, very necessary for it to be successful. Otherwise, you create another pyramid-type system.
Well, if I got a majority says Nexus should be a certain thing, you go, oh, okay, I guess you outvoted me?
I mean, no. I mean, what I do is I just listen to people and I say, well, what do you guys like? What would you like in a currency? What do you think we should improve on? Oh, what do you like? You like this? And so, I mean, that's where some of the ideas came. Like, if you look at it, you know, I was like, hey, you know, here's the basic idea. Some people were like, hey, you should make a new algorithm. So I'm like, okay. So I created a prime number algorithm, which is finding basically dense prime numbers. The prime number is something divisible by one in itself. So that kind of helps in the further proving of the density of prime numbers in these really, really big numbers. So we're kind of using the proof of work for another effect so that it helps benefit science.
Okay, I got that from you last time we talked.
Yep, I'm starting there.
You're starting to go into, you know, if we're going to be doing all this big, giant prime numbering, you know, we might as well use that work to find where all the prime numbers are, you know, just because we can. And do they cluster on a, you know, on a scale, on an integer line into infinity? You know, is there like galaxy clusters in there somewhere?
I mean, it
kind of
seems like
it. Is there a pattern? Well, I'm going to use my cryptocurrency to find out. Why?
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, we're right back. He's sitting here giving me a class. All right. This is interesting. You know, a unique... All right. He's going to correct, you know, what... I'm going to dumb it down for me, and then say it out loud, and you tell me if I'm right.
Okay.
When it came to the realization that... Bitcoin and a lot of cryptocurrencies, I'm sure we're going to get into nuances of the difference, but when you have a blockchain and you're taking all these transactions and all the people that moved and did and it kind of went and they're here and that and they got their own kind of, we have transactions, that is part of the next block. That's what they're solving. Well, the reward for that is now it's 12 and a half Bitcoin, which is nothing to sneeze at. But you also have the transaction fees and everything, and then it adds on to the chain. Well, that's why they got to have confirmations. You have one, two, up to six. By the time you get to six confirmations, it's like, you know, forever and always. But during that process, somebody else can have a solution, and they're building on a different chain until one kind of overtakes the other one. Boom, now they're back into that, and you secured your guess. Because if you guess, I win! Well, maybe not, you know? You need another, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour before it confirms that that one that you solved is the winner, because it could all go to someone else. So this process and your actual wallet itself, the address, the digital pairing, you know, that public and private key thing to control these transactions, this money on the chain, or these values, whatever, are separate. That's one thing that I got. Oh, we got to have all this processing power secured to blockchain. Now, to secure these transactions after this, once I got it and it's sitting for a couple of days or a couple of years in the top of my safe of a cold storage, that doesn't have anything to do with all that. It's the power of the encryption of that. When I use it, like when I go to Airbits, I guess they all have this now, but when I use it, I use an address. It goes out. I spend from that address. I got on Freedom's Phoenix, I'll have, just send me money at this gate. Well, I spend from there. Every time I do that, I lose security. You know, the guys, they can count it and show it and trace it back, and ISP, and we had the dark data services, man, on the show. And he's going, yeah, I can get down to your cell phone. I know who did it. And I'm going, really? Okay, can we not do that? One thing that he's done in the area where you're actually signing into the blockchain, when you're actually using it, I'm taking, you know, my Nexus coins that I got here. What do you call them, Nexus coins?
I just call it Nexus.
Nexus. All right, Nexus. So I got my Nexus out there, and I'm going to go spend it and stuff. Every time you log in, you're logging in to your own signature blockchain.
Kind of like, I mean, this is coming in Tritium, this feature right here called SigChains. Right
Tritium
now,
Tritium means a next version.
Yeah,
version
3.0.
3.0.
I mean, basically, it's kind of based on some of the ideas with the deterministic keys. You'll see some of that in like your copay wallet. You have your 12 words, but this is putting it actually into the protocol level so that you have your phrase and you have another number. And what you do is you can randomize and create a series of billions of keys in your own little blockchain in the blockchain that's validated by the miners. And so, like, you know, Ernie said, that's a really good way to show it is that you're logging into your own personal blockchain on there. And now every time you move a signal, you can even set it to say, I want to have 10 sig chains and I want them to swap randomly with one another. So you'll never really know what sig chains, what sig chain. Because from the top side, if you're looking at all the cryptography and all the hashes and all that random data, you're not going to be able to figure out and determine what's what. It's going to be obfuscated. It's going to be chained. And it's going to be very, very difficult.
So you're shape-shifting your own wallet.
Kind of, yeah. And it's kind of creating like a way for you to access it because, I mean, the UTXO work, like if you're running Bitcoin wallets aren't done anymore, but like you have a key pool, right? Which basically think of it as just like it's a little wallet, it's a class in your wallet file. Now, what it does is it holds about 100 keys. So
don't worry, audience, I'll decipher this in a minute.
You're supposed to make a new key every time because once you reveal your public key, then it's prone to be being reversed, especially by a quantum computer with Shor's algorithm, which basically what that means is the security of cryptography right now is so astronomical that it'd take, you know, more time than the known universe to crack it. So people are like, okay, well, so we can reasonably say that's secure because everything in a computer can be hacked. It's called brute forcing where you go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
There's a number.
And keep going.
You can guess.
Yeah, you just basically guess. But you make the number so astronomical that it would take so many guesses. It's just infeasible to ever think that it would be cracked. And that's where the idea of security comes in cryptography. Now, when it comes into this, public keys can be reversed with quantum computers in a time that's like, you know, 100 years, 1,000 years with a reasonable number of qubits. Like for Bitcoin, I think it's about 1,800 qubits. You know, us, it's around that. When we change the different keys, it's going to be about 3,000, 4,000 qubits. But
oh, my God, a qubit. Didn't they have a video game about that?
Yeah, that's another
story.
Doing
something?
That's the quantum computer crap. But basically, like,
yeah, but how do you know how many it's going to take? And we have,
there's it's called Shor's algorithm now. Pru Zalka and K Zalka, they did two studies of extending Peter Shor's algorithm, which was made in 1994, where basically they wrote a custom-tailored quantum circuit and they calculated the number of qubits that it would be required to run their algorithm. Because a quantum computer is kind of like an ASIC for Bitcoin right now, but it's just an ASIC that can, every qubit can hold a zero and a one at the same time. So what that does is it drastically multiplies your probabilities and the amount of computations you can do per space. So K-Zalka, K-Zalka was the one that addressed binary curves, and Pru Zalka addressed the prime curves. So basically, you have a field, and your field of like ECC is basically you have an elliptic curve equation, which is just think of it as just like it looks kind of like a horseshoe, and that's over a finite field. Now, the finite field can be based on prime, or it can be based on binary. So K-Zalka addressed that algorithm for the binary, and Pru Zalka addressed that for the actual the prime. So in that, they actually went through and they developed a quantum algorithm to crack those keys, which means that the NSA could take that quantum algorithm and they could build a quantum computer with it and make it work with a certain number of qubits. And so based on that, depending on registry sharing or not, it's around 1700 to 1800 qubits. You can speed up the time, but you know, that circuit doesn't have extensions for multiplying, but you'd have to like parallel process multiple computers on that if you wanted to speed the time up, as far as I understand it. So quantum computers are getting there where they're actually going to cause a lot of problems. So if you're just a normal user and you don't really realize like, oh, hey, you know, if I have my address and I just want my one address because that's like my bank account, like you're going to actually be extremely vulnerable to having your funds stolen. And there's even the large Bitcoin Collider that's basically trying to reverse these keys. So, I mean, 256 bits as Bitcoin keys are is not a large enough key space. You need 512 bits at least. And same with the hashing. It needs to be doubled because Grover's algorithm, another post-quantum algorithm, reduces your hash size by about 2 as far as quantum security. So the Bitcoin SHA-256 is only about 128-bit quantum secure. So that poses another problem. Now, your addresses that are hashed, you have your little wallet. It's, if you say it's in cold storage and it's hashed, in order to crack the pay-to-script hash or the pay-to-public key hash, so is the proper word, you'd have to reverse the RIPE-MD-160 hash, which is a 160, so that'd be about 80 bits, but RIPE-MD-160 is really not too secure. And then you'd reverse the SHA-256, and then you'd get
everybody
to your public
key.
Everybody
got that? You writing this down?
So
okay, but that doesn't do them any good if they don't know what my public is and sitting in my safe.
Yeah, and see, but they can still get to it, but once you spend it, if you don't put it to a new address or anything, you reveal your key every time you sign.
Okay. I can simplify this in 30 seconds when we come back. You know, I got kind of a beat on what he's talking about because I had the big math guy doing the whiteboard for me last, you know, couple weeks. So I'm going, all right, I'm gonna help you guys because, man, you're killing me. You know, this is not going over well. I'll be able to explain it when we come back.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with a chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Yeah. Taking a class, okay? Yeah, get over it. All right, we weren't done. Now, this is, he's trying, no, man, I will wait till the next one be able to explain it to you. Well, the part that I was trying to understand, you know, more of the hashing part. I still need that, you know, as I understood it before, he goes, yeah, kind of, but no, it's more like now I got to get a whole nother class. So I was right before, I just wasn't as right, okay? So we're going to get more specific on this, and I'll share it with you. And I need to get really up to speed real quick because Patrick Byrne's coming on in about 45 minutes, so we need to get up to about half an hour. So, the part that I was promising that I would explain to you is that if I create a randomized wallet, you know, or an address, and I spend to that address, this is what the paper wallet thing was about. I go and you buy, you know, a computer brand new, a printer brand new, they've never been on the internet, you got a brand new USB, you got them isolated, I put it in the, you know, my you know, gun room, and I got, you know, I'm sitting there and I made a bunch of wallets. So I got this paper, and it has a public address, and it has the private key that goes to that. There's nothing in it, you know? So then I spend to that. I put it in my safe. I don't touch it. It never seen the internet. Nobody knows it's there. It's got it. So it can't be hacked.
Well, that would be 128-bit quantum secure about, plus about 80 bits on the other. So you'd have
How would they even know it was there?
Well, you can reverse the hash with a quantum computer.
You reverse what? They don't know it's there.
Yeah, if it's not, if you don't even know it's there, yeah, that's another form of security. But that's where the large Bitcoin Collider's going, is they're actually literally making random numbers, okay? A bunch of random numbers as fast as they can, and they're seeing if those numbers are existing Bitcoin addresses. Now, if you've sent funds to that address, then it's known. Right.
Okay. So they're trying.
There's no point in having an address with no funds on it and having it secure. It doesn't matter.
Okay. No. This is my point. I have a randomized, nobody knows it's their address. I have on this piece of paper in my possession the key to that address. I spend to that, you know. Now it's there. Nobody knows it's there until I spend. If I spend from it, a portion of it, and keep that address, then people go, hey, man, there's an address there. With the,
no,
now
the address is published when you send to it. So if you send
Bitcoin. Wait. If I send a Bitcoin to my you know, private, I just made it Bitcoin paper wallet, yeah, well, public that, address by sending to that, I've revealed it?
Yeah, because, you know, the
then
network,
how do I get Bitcoin on it?
How do you get exactly? You have to send the Bitcoin. When you send the Bitcoin on the protocol level, the output, okay, it's called the TX out, that's going to basically be assigning a hash or the address to say, okay, my input is proven that I own this previous output. That's why it's called unsigned transaction output or unspent. And then you spend that input by revealing your public key and making a digital signature. And then on the output, you say, this is the next address, or this is the address I'm sending the ownership of this coin to. And let's say you send 100 coins to somebody else, and then you have 500 in it. Then you get the chains transaction, which is another output that goes either back to your original address or to a new address. It depends
okay,
on
well,
how it's programmed.
That's why some of these wallets, like Airbits,
you
when I
go
spend,
to a new address every
it spends
time.
It out, then it yes. takes the remainder, and it puts it back in a new random, I got a different address that now they don't have it. But what you're saying is that very process by which they spend back to the new account reveals it?
Well, technically, the address itself is revealed on the protocol on the output. So you'll have, this is where the pseudo anonymity comes in, where it, let's say you have five inputs and five outputs in a transaction. Now, you wouldn't know whose change transaction that was. And that's where, if you're careful, you can keep and remain a certain level of privacy with it, which is why Satoshi designed the splitting and combining of values that way, because you don't check, hey, does this input, you know, fund this output. You say, no, does the total amount of value in equal the total amount of value at minus a transaction fee, right? And the reason you check that is because you don't have a direct connection between inputs and outputs. So, I mean, if you more normal Bitcoin transactions are just usually one input, one or two inputs with one or two outputs, which is pretty easy to trace. And they already have AI programs that are tracing that. So the pseudo-anonymity factor of that is really kind of null. So when, let's say you created an address, you put it in your safe, you're like, okay, I have my key here. If you send Bitcoins to load that key up, to load that address up, then that address is then therefore revealed on the Bitcoin
network. So how do you fund? Do you have to get original Bitcoin? I mean, how do you fund an address to where nobody knows that address? You even funded it. Is it even possible?
No, not on the protocol. You can't fund something without knowing, because the protocol needs to verify that an address owns those funds. If you couldn't
so
prove
cold
that.
Storage don't mean squat. We hadn't even got to the point of brute
well,
force.
Cold
it.
Storage just mm-hmm. means somebody can't hack into your computer and steal your keys from it. Or cold storage means like, okay, well, I can keep this key on paper and put it in, you know, an offline computer, which is basically your safe, or different things like that. I mean, it's a method of security to prevent hackers from stealing your actual keys, right? But somebody can still brute force attack it from the front side. Now, I mean, you brute force a ripe MD, and then you brute force the double shot 256, and then you reveal the private key or the public key, and then that public key can then be reversed back with Shor's
okay,
algorithm
now,
into your
right.
private key.
This
with is, a quantum
let me go into you know, I know I'm lost, so the audience, I'm sure most of them are too. This is what happens. If you can brute force a proof of work, if I get and guess a number, you can brute force just to come up with a big-ass number just to find addresses. Oh, that had Bitcoin in it.
Yeah.
So I'm going, these all addresses, I mean, there is a finite number, okay? I mean, it's a big-ass number, but it's a finite number.
It's a finite number.
This is where the threat to quantum comes in. It's, I mean, it may have a threat, you know, on the proof of work and the transaction verification, and it's all mine now, you know, kind of thing. And it's mine now. And it says, thanks for playing, it's all mine now.
Yep.
So I'm going, all right, well, that's one threat. Once it's confirmed, those addresses that where you have all your, it's like your bank account mm-hmm. is sitting there, but nobody knows what your bank account number is.
Well, nobody knows who you are.
Unless they take, well, they might not know who you are. They don't care who you are. They just want to know where your money is.
Yeah.
So they go in, they say, all right, is this an account number? No. Is this one? Is this one? Is this one a trillion times? No, petahashing times. And they go, is this an account? Yes. It is an account number. Ooh, and it has this much in it. Because you can put in any address. Anybody can see. I put it in my QR code that's out there for Bitcoin.
Yep.
You can go look and see how much is in it. I keep taking it out. But, I mean, you know, you can go up and see what's in it.
Yep.
You go, there is an address, like Free Ross. They keep using the same account mm-hmm. thing, you know.
Well, and every time they send from that, they're revealing their public key, which then even makes it more vulnerable because Shor's algorithm, just for a reference, it's about 65 times or 64 times more vulnerable than Grover's as far as a Bitcoin key.
Okay, see, none of this means anything. All right, to most people. Let me go ahead okay. and finish this point. The point is that if you had all the bank accounts numbers that were ever available for every bank account, which would be easy for this, by the way. I mean, this happens all the time. Yep. But so you got to build this. Okay, I'll put it this way. As much as I'm explaining the vulnerability of blockchain technology and your bank account, and you think it's encrypted, you go, guy, it's way the hell better than Visa. Okay, I mean, already kicks the crap out of central banking, but it doesn't mean it's not vulnerable. Okay.
Yep.
And when it gets more and more private, and governments and the mob and the drug cartel, if they put, you know, guess what? Somebody's wanting to go get that account. So this is what's happening. You can take these computer processing guessing, and you go, big ass number, get boom, I dinged on one that is a Bitcoin account, and it shows me how much money is in there.
Yep.
Anybody can do that. It's just guessing that account. Once you get that, even if it never made it out to anything and it was in your safe,
they got your key.
They're just looking for, you know, bank accounts, and they're just looking. And they go, yep, and this is how much in it. To get it, that's a whole nother thing. That is the digital pairing to that, the private key, to be able to get it. But which one do you try and hack? The one with the most money in it.
Mm-hmm.
You go, I got these candidates here. How fast can we mine it before they move it, take it, do it? So then they take their big-ass computer. Now they got an address. Now can we reverse the hash and be able to get, nope, can't do that because it's hard to do. And they go, yeah, but not quantum hard. Right?
Something like that.
So something like that. So there is vulnerabilities. Nexus Earth, what we'll do is we'll go, Patrick Burns coming on, and we'll, you know, he's really good at dumbing this down for me, man. I give him that. And then we'll go through this stuff. And then, you know, Colin's got time. He'll stay through that. We'll go until we're freaking done today.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence, Cantrell, Colin Cantrell, NexusEarth.com. Now, this is what we're going to do. We're going to run out of time. I just knew this was going to happen on a 2-hour, just even understanding. Oh, my God. First hour, we get a little bit about Colin. I was a young man, and I got my first computer, and poof, I lived in the attic, and I just took my meals under the door. Okay.
Very much.
So this is, one of them. He's teenagers, you know, during the Levolution days. He kind of gets exposed to, you know, philosophical on his own, kind of decentralization is the way to go because it's the most robust and freedom-oriented of guys. That's what we're going to do. 13, he comes, you know, across cryptocurrency. He has a background in programming. He's got some math skills. The boy's got skills. Then he goes, well, I can do this. I can do it better. I can do it easier. I can do it more decentralized. I'm looking for decentralized. He's saying decentralized. I'm looking. It doesn't look very decentralized to me. You know, it's got all the same problems that I was screaming about. I'm going, so how has it changed? Well, then, you know, you go months, years before you even find out there's core dev. These core developers that are, you know, paid for by and kind of doing a meeting with CIA and stuff. And then Satoshi is gone.
Yep.
He goes, and I'm out of here, you know. That's my cue. So I'll just take these. I'll go over here and, you know, peace be upon
me. That was WikiLeaks, actually. I know if you read his Bitcoin talk, you know, he starts talking when WikiLeaks picked up Bitcoin and they started accepting Bitcoin donations. He was like, oh, man, they battered the beehive. Like, we have a swarm of people coming. Like, I'm out. And that's when Satoshi left.
So he's just like, and I'm
yeah, this is getting too big. I was having fun with our little community building this thing, and now it's like the lid's off. Uh-oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, what was it, Gavin Andreessen, you know, but he's like a...
He got the key first. So the alert key, I mean, for lack of better, simply, it was a little... You had the private key to be able to send a message to all the Bitcoin nodes to say update or whatever. It was just for what Satoshi had to basically let everybody know on their computer program, hey, there was things happening on the network. So Gavin was handed the alert key. And that's kind of where, you know, he was given the first lead dev position, you know, after Satoshi.
And then the CIA contacted him and said, hey, man, you want to come in? You know, explain this to us. We need to talk about, we were going to do this, and you beat us to it, damn it, you know, kind of something. And he goes, yeah, well, I'm going to go meet with the CIA, and Satoshi's gone.
Yep.
He says,
something like that.
And we're out of here. And so I'm, you know, is, and that's one thing that we're talking about. Not only can you trace back, you know, Bitcoin, you can start get the where it came from and who's in the dark data services of, oh, my God. And now we're going to be talking about, certainly in the after show when we do this, and it'll be part of the archive, and we'll maybe even separate it out as we get into actually Nexus Earth and all these problems that you're hoping to solve.
I've solved a good amount of them so far, and I've got all the algorithms and building the rest of them.
Yeah, stay on the mic, man. Pull it down if you need to.
Yeah, so I've solved a lot of them already. Like, you know, I mean, kind of checks and balances, minor security, time synchronization on the nodes instead of having to, you know, use unified, or instead of having to use NTP, and then built a new database from scratch, designed, tailored specifically for blockchains, kind of built a new.
Oh, you got rid of NTP? Oh, thank God you got rid of that. Whatever the hell that is.
Network time protocol. It's just.
Yeah, you guys are killing me, man. Can't do this military crap with me. You know, you got to like say the words, and then you got to explain the words, and then we got to go.
You know, you heard, like, not everybody has money, but everyone has time. So the trust system allows people to be awarded with time, because I believe that everybody deserves an equal opportunity to life. And I'm thinking not everybody is equally blessed with monetary resource. So, you know, giving that balance, I'm like, well, what's the natural resource that we all have equally? And it's like time. So let's figure a way to utilize time to build kind of a trust that's represented by math, kind of how crypto does it, which allows the network to start to distinguish from one another who a dishonest node is. Like, I mean, Antpool are releasing empty blocks just because they don't want to get them orphaned, you know, from Bitcoin, which slows down the transaction processing even more. There's no penalty to that. It's all just the proof of work. That's the only real way that there's any, like, vote, because the proof of work was an initial.
What the hell are you talking about? Antminer.
Antpool.
I mean, Antpool. When Antpool, which probably has a bunch of Antminers, you know, Antpool... when they do this, you're saying that it's easier, faster for them to discover a block and get their 12.5 Bitcoin reward if they don't include transactions in that, because they can win that and they have a little bit of an edge if they don't, you know, bog down the guessing with transactions. But you need transactions included, or even if they win, now it pushes off to the next block, blah, blah, blah.
It's not bogging the guessing. It's just like downloading a movie takes longer than downloading a song because it's a bigger file. So transferring that over the wire or over the internet takes more time when it's bigger. So all those transactions in that block, like the block size debate is what we're getting at, they fill that block up and they make it bigger, which makes it send across the network slower, right? Which the problem with that is, because if two people, like we're saying, are guessing and they make a block at the same time, then those blocks are going to go into a point where the next block that includes that as a previous one is what's going to decide what one's valid.
Yeah, see, this is one thing. Okay, this is one thing that I started to understand. It's not just discovering the block that's important. It's discovering the next block, because that next block is what gives validity to the one before it.
Yes.
And the longer one, that's why you got this six confirmation thing. If I have Iceland and China gets a target number, not necessarily the same number, that's a whole other thing we're going to go on about, but they win. They hit the ball over the fence. Okay, we win. We got a number. And they publish that block. Say, here's all the transactions. We're going to add this one. Here's the next one. And now use this one to start looking for the next one that links to that. Well, another person did the same thing. So they may be looking on that chain. Then somebody gets the second one, the third one, the fourth. At some point, by the time you get the six confirmations, one of them is going to win over the other one.
Well, and it's really about who gets the block first, because as soon as a miner gets the next block, they're going to start building the next one. So if your block processes or propagates faster, then you're going to have an edge over the other miner.
Because they're going to be looking for the one that links to that. And this is my reading. If Iceland discovers it and China, and they broadcast to the network, well, which one do people pick? Usually the one they got first.
Yep.
You know, so they'll start going at it. So, like, I was talking to Joby Weeks, he's going, yeah, at BitClub, we have our own blockchain nodes out there that we send it to. Boom! Everybody get going. We got to rock and roll the next one, because unless we win the next one built on whether they get it or not,
we don't get the Bitcoin.
They don't get it.
And so that's why
This understanding, because nobody was explaining this. After almost a decade, nobody's explaining this stuff to me. And I got some math geeks that never even, you know, play with, don't have Bitcoin, but they understood it to the point that they don't have Bitcoin. They go, now we can see where this is going. You know, that everybody, this whole thing is, they got to come up with some solutions because this is not viable.
And I'm happy you're understanding it more, and I'm happy I can help.
Yeah, no, no. It's not viable unless. So we're going to get into these unlesses, because I'm going, with this arms race of processing power, and it's going to the freaking moon.
Ridiculous amounts of power.
It's going to get to the point to where it's all the power in the universe to run the damn thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know,
and
this is where it's going.
And then there's going to be less and less Bitcoins and less, and I mean, it's going to deflate more and more, and then it's going to be putting the fee market higher and higher. We already saw what a small block does to the transaction fees. They went up 80% because people had to bid a higher fee to get the transactions processed
in a reasonable time. I need it to confirm quickly.
Yeah.
And I need, you know, not have $5 billion transaction because there went Watch My Bit. I was all hip on Watch My Bit. Watch My Bit, instead of watching a commercial, you just blip for a dime. You're watching a video that you want to see, and the mechanism disperses the money to all the band members immediately. You get a popular song, we're getting paid, you know. All of a sudden, MPAA and Hollywood and the record industry and everybody kind of, they can suck it. Publishing, done. It's all done. But if you can't do micropayments, to the, like a dime, a quarter, and when it, the transaction fees were nothing, now, you know, to buy a $5 latte costs you $3 in transaction fees.
Yeah, and the priority equation also is against the number of, so if you have like, I mean, just for happenstance, let's say you just happen to have four or five inputs to make one small little $10 payment, right? That transaction is going to be bigger, which means your fee is going to be a larger, you know, per kilobyte, and it's also going to have a lower priority because what they'll do is they'll do dust spam attacks, and they'll attack it with small inputs. So, I mean, little guys like us, if we want to buy a cup of coffee, it makes it more difficult.
You know, this is one thing that when this debate was going, oh, it's filling up the block, it's filling up the block. And I go, well, hell, they could just do a bunch of itty-bitty transactions to fill up the block just because they want
or
you to be a butthead.
Or make a really big one. Like, use a bunch of inputs that are 00001 Bitcoin and then send a transaction for 0.1 with hundreds of inputs and make it a gigantic transaction to fill it
they
up.
They wouldn't do that. That'd be
oh,
wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah, who would? Right.
That'd be wrong. You know, they're forcing this. And I'm just saying, there's so many problems that, you know, in this great gift to humanity that can be addressed. That's why you have alternative coins.
And that's what we're working towards doing.
Nexus Earth. All right, after Patrick Byrne, we'll get into the weeds on this without commercial break, and we're going to get understood. We'll be right back.